You're listening to Wholesaling Inc., episode number 1420.
All right, if I make 50 grand, here's the buckets of where it's going to. And I didn't do that. So there was just an overflow. Just my money was overflowing, just spilling on the ground and going to stupid places. Now, I'm glad that I learned how to direct where my money goes like 8 or 9 years ago, that now I don't look at me making money. I look at it just money comes into the company, it goes into these buckets, and whatever spills over after the fifth bucket is now my free money, my Costa Rica surfing money, you know?
This is game-changing information guaranteed to raise your real estate wholesaling business with actionable steps you can take immediately to navigate the ins and outs of wholesaling and start making money today. Join us as we put our guests in the hot seat and dive deep to dissect their strategies for success to enable you to duplicate their results. You're listening to Wholesaling Inc., the only show dedicated to making you a fortune in wholesaling.
Welcome to the Wholesaling Inc. podcast. I'm your host today, Brent Bowers, and today I have Pace Morey on with us, and he is going to give you some incredible, incredible value. Guys, take note, get your pen and paper out. If you're driving your vehicle, save this podcast episode and come back to it. You know, Pace is going to talk to you about how he's done multiple real estate deals. He's going to give you the ins and outs. He's going to talk about his equation, which is very, very important. When Pace started out, he was keeping about one out of every 10 or so properties. Now he has completely flopped that, and he is more of a buy and hold investor, and he is keeping nine out of 10 of those. And just talking about the deals that he's doing with 0% financing, which I absolutely love, which he calls it principal payments, which is very, very powerful. You don't want to go to a seller and say, hey, I need a 0% interest rate. No, what if I give you a nice fat payment each month, a principal only payment each month? So enjoy this episode, take a lot of notes, come back to it, and remember to take action. Let's get right into it. Pace Morby, happy Sunday and welcome to the Wholesaling Inc. podcast.
Brother, we love Wholesaling Inc. Thank you so much. I'm also part of the TTP tribe. So shout out to Brent Daniels and the whole entire Wholesaling Inc. crew. Pretty amazing company.
Yeah, I love it. Just the value you add with your community and just the powers combined with Wholesaling Inc. and, you know, the Sub 2 community. I do so many land deals with your community. So it's just been a great, you know, synergy. And I'm excited to just be on here with you today. So, you know, we're going to get right into it. You brought up something before we hit the record button, you know, just talking about the plan for 2024. What are you going to do to make money in 2024? Make money today. I call it income producing activities. So, you know, let's just start with that. You know, I'd like to hear kind of what you're thinking. I'll share with you what we're doing. I'm sure it's probably very similar, but different type. I know you deal a lot in houses. I love land, but love to hear it.
Yeah, this is a great topic because I see people sending me in my DMs. They'll go, hey, what do you think about this person's market prediction? What do you think about this person's market prediction? And it seems to be split on YouTube. If you go, you'll see Graham Stephan, the market's going to crash. This person says, dude, there's no way the market's going to crash. You know, supply, demand, and people are battling back and forth. And really what they're battling over is how can I get clicks on my freaking YouTube channel? They're not actually sitting down. And I'm friends with Graham Stephan. I've been on his show 3 times. I love Graham. But when I listen to Graham, who has not bought a piece of real estate in 5 years, but giving me real estate predictions, I have a hard time taking that seriously. Then I also listen to a tax guy who is actually a genius, but he's not actively buying real estate. So I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't know that I can listen to you either. So that's my response to all these people in the DMs. Like, here's what I'm doing in 2024 because I'm in the river, right? So if you're going to ask advice for somebody, where should I catch the biggest fish? Would you ask the person that's standing on the side of the stream looking at the guy fishing, or would you ask the guy in the middle of the river with his waders on casting his line?
Such a
that's
good analogy.
Me. That's Brent, right? That's you, right? The whole entire team at Wholesaling Inc., you guys are in the water. You're feeling the rapids against your body. You can feel the momentum. You can see what's going on. You have a firsthand experience of where the fish are and where they're biting, where they're not. So I look at 2024. I think looking back at 2023 and 2022, creative finance had a heyday. Like, it was just insane for 2023. It was insane. I went probably to a point in 2021, you know, looking for deals, to now in 2023 and into 2024, I am having to say no to 90% of deals that come to me, not because they're not great deals. It's because they're all great deals, And I am also a big buy and holder. I cannot just go and buy 18 properties a week and onboard those, right? So for me, we refined our buy box because I think that 2024, we're going to have another heyday in creative finance. Because here's what I think is going to happen. Prediction. Market's going to settle in a little bit. I think we're going to go down probably 7 to 10% in our overall market, even with interest rates dropping. So people are saying interest rates are going to come down and the market is going to blow up. Guys, I still don't think the market's going to blow up. I think the market is actually going to settle in a little bit. And what's happening is there's a lot of problems on the horizon if they do not raise or lower interest rates. I think the Fed is coming in and going, oh my gosh, we gotta lower rates because it's going to get really, really bad. And I think that they're just going to settle it in. And if that means they're going to settle it in, I don't think the market's going to go crazy up and I don't think it's going to go crazy down. But if that's the case, then creative finance is going to be a big, big, big year in 2024 and 2025. So looking at what you guys are doing in land, I imagine you're going to say, we're going to do more seller finance deals than we have ever done in 2024. Same thing for me. I am not even looking at cash deals. I won't even waste my time on a cash deal this year. I'm not messing with banks. I'm not going and using credit. I'm not doing any of those things. So for 2024, we've actually taken our buy box from 15 different states down to one state.
Wow.
Because I'm getting 15 times the amount of deal flow than I did in 2021 when my buy box was 15 different states. We're just zeroing down on one state and doing the same amount of deals in one state. So lots of sub two, a lot of seller finance. I was a big wholesaler for 5 years. For people that don't know my story, I'll be really quick because I want to hear what you guys are doing. I was the number one HomeVestor franchise in the country. So the We Buy Ugly Houses people, there's 1,100 of those. I was number one for 1 year and I was number two or three for the other 3 years. So I'm like top 1% wholesalers in the country. And back then I was doing creative finance, but I wasn't in a position to hold those properties. I wanted the transactional income, the day-to-day income that was coming from wholesaling sub two deals, wholesaling seller finance deals. And I would basically hold in my portfolio one out of seven or one out of 10 deals that I did. So I went and did 10 wholesale deals, generated $200,000 in cash. I'd go buy one sub two deal and I'd put that thing in my portfolio and go do another 9 wholesales, right? So that's what I used to do. Now it is literally the opposite. I'm 9 out of 10 deals I look at go in the portfolio. I don't make today money on those. I sit on them. I'm building massive wealth. Last year, we accumulated $165 million in real estate in the portfolio. And if you think about that, right? At some point, that $165 million in real estate, I'd say in 15 years, will double in value. So I know in 15 years, just from what I did last year, my net worth will go up $165 million over the next 15 years. So for me, I'm in portfolio growth mode, zeroing in on one state, which is the state of Arizona, which is my backyard. And I'm not shutting down, I'm just stopping buying in these other markets. I also have pivoted very heavily to mid-size multifamily, 30 to 100 units, because that's where the sellers of those properties are not typically represented by a broker. Brokers don't know much about creative finance. And so I'm calling sellers directly and saying, hey, looks like you've owned this property for over 25 years. I'd like to help you with a retirement plan where you become the bank instead of the landlord. And that's my pitch. And I'm just buying, we bought $100 million last year in small multifamily, all on seller finance or sub two. So that is my focus right now.
That's huge. That needs to be repeated. I'm calling to help you with a retirement plan to where you become the bank, because the banks are the biggest, prettiest buildings in every city and every state because they know something about money. And you no longer have to be the landlord fixing the pipes, getting the calls. Like today, my wife's car is stuck in our garage because our garage door won't open up. Houses are a pain in the butt, or you know, just managing them are a pain. And thank God the garage door guy answered on a Sunday, which I was blown away that he did. But that's so huge. And then you mentioned Arizona. What I love about that state is you don't have hurricanes, you don't have volcanoes, I don't think you have earthquakes. There's like no like massive things that happen out there other than possibly water shortages that I can think of. It's like in Colorado, like we had windstorms constantly just destroying our properties. Florida had get hit with hurricanes out here. Arizona just seems very peaceful out there.
Yeah, it's steady Eddie. And if you look at my portfolio, I own The most properties I own are in Texas, Florida, and North Carolina. About 5 years ago, I started deviating out of the state of Arizona because my students are just doing massive deals outside of the state. So I'm like, I'll do deals with you guys all over the country. I start buying all over the country. My largest asset, 587 units, is in Houston, Texas. My insurance doubled last year. It went from like 25 grand a month to 50 grand a month on that big asset. Same thing in Florida. And I'm just seeing massive insurance climbs, massive property tax climbs in both Florida and Texas. And what they're saying, like Governor Ron DeSantis in Florida has actually put a task force together to say, we have to stop this insurance gouging. Well, where it's really coming from, think about it. It's not just the natural disasters that are happening in Florida. Those are very significant. But what it is are these insurance poachers. What they do is they're restoration companies that are knocking on doors and going, hey, let me do a free inspection on your house. They're going in and finding a little bit of mold, and they're going and filing a $50,000 insurance claim that the insurance companies are going, are you freaking kidding me? We are getting taken advantage of in Florida. So they're doubling people's premiums. So for buying holders like me, I'm like, I'm going to stick to Nevada. I'm going to stick to Arizona, where we don't have any of this natural disaster stuff. And I'm just going to keep doubling down on what is really working.
And what's working. That's right. And yeah, same thing in Colorado. Like every time a hailstorm would happen, these guys would be knocking on the door, wanting to replace the roof. Let me get up on your roof. No, stay off the roof. Another thing you mentioned is that buy and hold, which you had the foresight when you're just starting out with that transactional money, because you had to pay the bills, you know, you had to quit your job, all these things. So you were keeping about one out of 10. Did I hear that correctly? One out of 10 properties?
One out of 10 for the first 2 years. And then I transferred to one out of 5. And then I went to one out of 3. And then I started switching it around.
That's amazing. And I see it with the land sharks. We get caught up on this transaction roller coaster. And before we know it, we've done 300 and something properties. And we only have a portfolio of 5 or 6 or 7 or 8. So anybody listening to that, take note of that. Start planning to keep, you know, 10% of them today, because that's the long-term wealth. And now pace has kind of shifted into 90% of the hold and, you know, doing a little bit of transactional income. But what's really amazing about that is these properties are all getting paid down by the tenants that are paying the bills, paying the rent, plus cost segregation and depreciation, a lot of tax incentives for that. I mean, it's a beautiful thing. Like these properties are going to be all paid for by the time you're...
it's crazy.
Retirement.
It's crazy. Like if you think about... it's a patience game too. Like if you... we'll talk about a couple of assets. Actually, I got a deal from a TTP student 4 years ago. And I'll give you like the patience that a lot of people don't have. So a TTP student comes to me and they go, hey, I've got this lead where they want too much money. This is where this is my bread and butter. You got a seller that wants too much money. That's my favorite seller, right? Because I can give them what they want, right? Same thing with you, Brent. Like you do this with land, is I can go to the seller and say, hey, look, this is an RV park. I'm sorry. This is a mobile home park in Yuma, Arizona. The seller wanted $600,000 for something that's worth 500 grand. Okay. Anybody else would have ran away from this deal. By the way, the TTP student made 30 grand assigning the deal to me, and I did pay 600 for a $500,000 park. Okay. So people go, oh my gosh, Pace overpaid for the property. If I was going to go get a bank loan, I would have had to buy that for like 350 probably to get a good enough deal to go get a loan. But I paid 600. Why? Well, because I have foresight and I have vision. And I look at this property, I go, if the seller gives me 0% seller finance at $600,000, who really actually overpaid for this property?
Yeah, you underpaid for it. Because if you had a mortgage,
yes,
and these are just really round numbers, $200,000 mortgage at 6% interest, over 30 years, you're going to pay $420,000 in payments. But you're only paying $600,000 flat, interest.
So this is how I did. I said, hey, seller, you want 600 grand for this property. Got it. So I tell the seller all the time, if every negotiation is like a teeter-totter, right? There has to be a balance. We're trying to balance this out. And right now, you've got your weight really heavy on the side, and I'm just sitting up in the air all exposed and looking stupid because you want $600,000 for a property that's worth $500,000. And instead of me fighting you, how about this? I'll let you keep your $600,000, but you've got to give me a low or no money down, and you've got to give me low or no interest. And the seller says, well, what do you propose? I go, why don't we do a zero down? I don't ever say 0% interest to a seller because it really triggers something in their mind.
No.
I say principal only. I go principal only payments. And the seller's like, okay, when do payments start? And I go 30 days after I take over the property. So the way I structured this deal, and I did have to come out of pocket. I paid $30,000 to the TTP student, and I paid closing costs to close on this deal. So another $5,000.
Sounds like a bargain.
The property nets me $7,500 a month net. That's not including the mortgage pay down. That's just the cash flow. So this property, by the way, guys, you would not want this property. But I have vision and I have patience. So that $7,500 in 4 years, this is part of the game. This is part of the game that people don't want to hear. Now, this is, I don't do this on every property. I do this on like 5% of my properties, but this is what I did with $7,500. I could have lived on that. I could have kept sucking the money out of that deal. But what I did is every month a tenant moved out, I would take the money that I've accumulated, and my property manager never gave me my money. He collected all the rents. His name is Steve. Shout out to Steve. Collects all the rents, has $7,500 this month, $7,500 next month. He's got $15,000. Perfect. Now he's got enough money as one tenant moves out of a mobile home to renovate that mobile home and raise rents $300. Wow. Then do it to the next one. Then do it to the next one. We have now renovated all 38 units on this park over the last 4 years. And next month, I will get my first actual take-home check. My first take-home check now is $30,000 a month. Now, in the meantime,
hold on, that deserves a victory bell.
Boom. So amazing. This is the patience game, right? Like, think about this for the wholesalers out there. I love wholesale. I think one of the best things to ever do. If I was going to do anything to get started in real estate, I'd be wholesaling creative deals, wholesaling land, wholesaling whatever I could get my freaking hands on. But that TTP student made 30 G's on something that nobody else would touch. And as he's getting $30,000, he's like, what the heck is your game plan? And I'm like, I draw it out with him on a whiteboard. And he's like, oh my gosh, I could have kept this deal and I gave it to you.
No, gosh, that's the wrong way to look at it. He should look at that as, holy crap, I just got paid $30,000 to get knowledge that can make me a multi-millionaire and change my family's legacy forever.
Well, here's what he did, Brent. This is, you actually hit it right on the head. This is exactly what he did. So he looks at this, he watches the paperwork, he sees the whiteboard video. I drive down to Yuma, hang out with him for the day. And I said, dude, let's take over Yuma. Like, you should be the mayor of freaking Yuma. We should own so many mobile home parks together. So he goes, well, what do you mean? I go, here's what I propose. Keep finding these mobile home parks for me. I'll overpay it on seller finance as long as we're getting 0% interest. I'll overpay. I'm happy to overpay because I understand amortization. I understand these things, how this all works. You know, you don't have to be that smart in this world. You just have to know 1% more than anybody else. And some of the things that we just talked about on this podcast are those 1% little nuggets that give you the cutting edge over somebody else. So he goes and he finds another deal 2 weeks later. It's an 18-unit mobile home park, gets another 0% seller finance deal. And he's today still my 30% partner on it. And I paid him $20,000 up front for finding the deal. So not only did he get a wholesale fee, he got 30% ownership in that park. Guess what? We've now done six since then. So you can wholesale deals and keep equity as long as you're negotiating that with the person that's buying. And so I would give that to the Wholesaling Inc. audience as a little tip, guys. If you are wholesaling and you have a buyer you're doing deals with over and over and over, and you keep flooding them with deals, go to that buyer and say, hey, I'll keep being really loyal to you. I want to cut on the back end. Like, I want to not only get my wholesale fee up front, but I want to, you know, let's say that you're one of Brent's students and you're wholesaling land to this buyer. What you do is you tell that buyer, hey, I've wholesaled you 3 plots of land this year. I really would like to have some equity on the back end of these if you're developing or doing whatever. And now you guys are getting the kicker on the back end and you're making more money on the back end than you were on the front end. And a lot of people are just short-sighted, not because they're not short-sighted. They're just new and they haven't learned it yet. And also they're so overwhelmed with all the terminology for the first 3 to 6 months that they're like, I'm not even going to worry about that. And that's perfectly fine. I was the same way. I couldn't have done this stuff until like 9 months or a year into it. So just know that that's one of the pot of golds at the end of the rainbow.
It's definitely an evolution too. You know, we deal with what we deal with today. And then tomorrow we come up with new solutions, new challenges, and we definitely evolve. And I want to go back to, you had mentioned 4 years before you took the first check on that mobile home park. But think about it. A lot of people go to college for 4 years. They're shelling out money for 4 years. And then hopefully maybe they get a job after that. I just paid off my college debt a little over a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. I cannot believe how much money I paid to go to that school or multiple schools. So I just look at that as the rite of passage. You got to get it in and be patient. Like that's the hardest thing for business owners, people going out and starting a business. We have no patience. We're like, we need it now. We need it right now. But if you look at, you know, 4 years ahead or maybe 8 years ahead, or me, I like to look 30 years out, because all this real estate is going to be free and clear in less than 30 years.
Right. A big part of it too is when you're wholesaling, I would say the biggest problem I had when I was strictly wholesaling, we still wholesale, you know, 10% of what we see today. But my biggest problem is lifestyle creep. When I was wholesaling. So what happened is I would do more deals, but then all of a sudden I was like, damn, I'm making 50 grand a month take home. And like a couple of years ago, I was taking 20 home, like on my job or my construction business. All of a sudden you got a bigger house. You got, you know, an extra truck, one for the garage that's nice and shiny, and one that goes out into the off-road that I can go shoot guns with. I got two trucks and I got this and I got that. So now that extra $50,000 doesn't actually go into my portfolio. It just finds its way into spending into my lifestyle, which is stupid. And guess what, guys? This is what humans do. So I wish I didn't do that as much in my first 4 years. I wish I told my money where to go. So Dave Ramsey, who I don't love all his advice, he does have good advice. He says, if you don't have a place for your money to go, your money will find a place to be. And it will. I remember like when I was 22 years old, check this out, I was delivering pizza as I was going to college in the day. I was delivering pizza. And I made like $500. I had already owned my first house. I made $500 in cash tips that month. I was like balling out, you know? I got $500 above my, and beyond my paycheck and my bills and all my needs. Guess what happens? The sewer backs up on my house and I have to call Roto-Rooter. Guess how much it costs?
$500.
So if you don't tell your money where to go, the universe will find a place for it to go. And I wish I knew that. And I said, all right, if I make 50 grand, here's the buckets of where it's going to. And I didn't do that. So there was just an overflow. Just my money was overflowing, just spilling on the ground and going to stupid places. Now, I'm glad that I learned how to direct where my money goes like 8 or 9 years ago, that now I don't look at me making money. I look at it just money comes into the company, it goes into these buckets, and whatever spills over after the fifth bucket is now my free money, my Costa Rica surfing money, you know?
Wow. I'm so glad you said the lifestyle creep, because that's... Well, I just came back from Costa Rica. That's one of the things I was thinking about while we were down there is, you know, you got to be careful about, you know, getting possessions, because eventually your possessions will possess you and you got to go out there and work and do more. I'm at a stop. Like, we're not buying any more toys, no more vacation homes. It is only the money that comes in is to build more wealth, to tithe, to put in, you know, profit first accounts. Not to buy more toys, not to buy more houses, none of that stuff, because you've got to stop it. It's got to be stopped. And for someone that's just listening to this, like, geez, just tell me how to make my first $10,000. This will come. It absolutely will come, because you're going to be like, when I was in the military, I was making like $5,000 a month, working unbelievable hours, like 14-hour days. That first $55,000 a month, I literally thought I had won the lottery. But guess what? That money was gone. Gone. And by the way, 6 years ago, two days ago, I left the military. I haven't had a real job in 6 years. Like, anybody listening to this, you might be hearing what Pace is talking about, like millions of dollars worth of real estate, or what I'm talking about, thinking that that's out of reach for you. It is so darn close. You just got to go out there and take the steps of what we talk about on this podcast every day, what Pace talks about on all of his social media channels every single day. But yeah, that lifestyle creep, that's a real thing. And holy cow, I wish I would have kept living off that $5,000 a month. I don't know how we did it back then. I don't know how we
did
it.
Isn't that funny that like later on in life, I remember when I was 24 years old, I said, if I could just make $8,000 a month, I would be set for life. Like $96,000, I could be set for life. Now I look at it, I'm like, I can't pay my mortgage payment for $8,000. I can't pay my grocery bill. We have parties over here all the time. I don't know how the heck I did it. I don't know how I did it. And it was at some point, it was my goal. So lifestyle creep is a big thing. And the reason why it's important for a newbie to know that, what I do is I have my needs bucket, right? Like, what do I need to survive? Then I have an overflow bucket called my investment bucket. Then I have I call it my screw it bucket. So it's like, screw it, I got extra money bucket. So the only time I can spend money on extra things is if my investment criteria has been met for the month. So yes, I'm constantly trying to make more money, but I'm only trying to make more money so I can keep pouring into the investment bucket. I've got a crazy goal. I want to make $2 million a month in passive income. I know that's a crazy number for some people. Like, I'd love to do $5,000 a month. Guys, it compounds, right? What did Warren Buffett say about compound interest? He says it's the eighth wonder of the world is compound interest. So as you compound, just, I had zero assets 65 months ago. 65 months ago, now we've got half
That's 5 years. That's five years.
In 5 years, I got half $1 billion in holding. About 200 million of it is with partners. The other 300 million is just by myself. And so think about that. Like in 15 years, that portion of my portfolio will have doubled to 600 million. I won't have any more debt on it. I'll have $300 million in equity. It sounds unfathomable. And you're like, what would you do with that money? I would build more businesses and do more things and whatever else. I also just want to live. I want to do things that I never thought were even possible, because as a contractor for 10 years, I didn't even think wholesaling was a possibility for me. I remember for 7 years, Brent, I told myself, I'm going to get my first deal. I'm going to get my first deal. I'm going to get my first deal. For 7 years, I lied to myself. So guys, it's not like I was born this way and having all these possibilities. It really doesn't take that much time. You just have to let it compound. And what's tough, like what you mentioned earlier, Brent, is making the decision on some of these deals where you go, man, I could take this $20,000 assignment right now, or I could make no money on this deal right now and set it in my portfolio. And the future pace in 24 months is going to say, thank goodness you bought this thing and you kept it in the portfolio. You know, but think about that RV park now. How much work do I have to do to go get a $30,000 assignment fee every single month? I probably have to put in 10 to 20 hours worth of work for that deal. Well, guess what? Now I have $30,000 coming to me for the rest of my life. And in 5 years, that's going to double, because I won't double my rents, but I'll probably add another $300. That will go up to 40 grand. Another 5 years, another 10 grand. Another 5 years, I'll get to a point in probably 15, 20 years that RV park's paying me $60, $65,000 a month in net positive cash flow. I don't ever have to look for another wholesale deal if I decide that's what I want to do. So wholesalers, understand, go get that first deal, get that momentum. I'd say by the time you've done your 30th deal, you should have one deal in your portfolio. And you should have an equation now of every 10 deals you do, you buy one deal, put in your portfolio, forget it even exists. Then after, you know, your second year, I would convert that to 1 in 5. Then after your third or fourth year, I'd go to 1 in 3. Then after your probably fifth year, you're doing like every 5 deals, you're putting 4 deals in your portfolio, because now the cash flow from the previous properties are now supplying you with the money to buy the next couple of deals. So you don't really need to pull money out of your wholesale business anymore to go deploy into capital or deploy in assets. Your assets are now giving you the cash. This is the scary thing. A lot of people think we live on cash flow. You know, I don't live on cash flow. My cash flow buys future cash flow.
Yeah.
And I still have other active babies. Income. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Those babies are making babies. And that's the sheer compounding effect of this. And again, if you keep that lifestyle creep from happening, your acceleration happens so much quicker. So much quicker. You know, what do I mean by that? Is okay, you do your first deal, let's pay off the credit cards, let's put a little money in the savings account and do another deal. And now you just keep building that up. That's so, so powerful. I mean, I take land profits and put it into buildings as well, because, you know, it's, I'm looking at the, my thought was more negative. Like, what if I run out of energy? I need to have something in 30 years continuously feeding us. I did a Habitat for Humanity. I went and volunteered yesterday. I love doing that. That's so fun to see these houses go up. I heard all these old guys talking about their IRAs and their stocks and how they're just nervous and how are they going to have enough money to live. I had such a peaceful, calming feeling knowing that we have taken these land profits and put them into buildings that will all be paid for way before I look that or I get that old as some of these guys. You know, that's the plan. It's having this free and clear real estate.
And if you talk, you know, you mentioned profit first strategy. If you guys read Profit First for Real Estate book, David Richter did a great job. I'm actually referencing that book in one of his chapters. I believe in profit first. Why? Because you have a category or a bucket for your tax money. So let's say I'm wholesaling and I'm making a bunch of money on land deals. Well, you're dividing out what your future tax liability is going to be into a bank account. You know what I use with that tax liability money is I go actually deploy that into real estate, and then that real estate offsets my taxes. So I don't actually have to pay the money to the IRS. So last 5 years, I have not paid any federal income tax at all because the purchases. Wild. Yeah. So the IRS is like, look, we're going to give you a choice. You can either pay us 30% or 43% at my tax bracket. Well, you can either pay us, or we'll let you avoid paying us, but you have to put it into cash flowing real estate.
It's a no-brainer, right?
It's a no-brainer. It's like, who wrote these freaking tax codes? Obviously, rich people.
Yeah.
And so with the tax profits, guys, you don't even have to necessarily take the tax profits. You could just take you could take the land income and take the tax portion of it and invest that into sub-2 and seller finance deals that have cash flow. And you now can avoid all your taxes, which is pretty freaking awesome.
That's exactly what we do. I just bought I bought a commercial building, industrial building. I love those because the tenants never call you because they literally improve it and they're usually blue collar. They don't want you to come and look and see what they've done. They just pay the rent. But I had to spend another $450,000 before December 31st. And that's a very small purchase, by the way. I put $100,000 into it, which was the tax money. And then the seller did, I didn't get 0% interest. That would have been amazing. I get a lot of those principal only payments, AKA 0% interest on land deals. This guy just wanted 8% interest, fully amortized for 15 years. In commercial loans, if you go to the bank, every 9%, every 5 years, you got to refinance. That is their trick to keep you in another fully amortized loan. But that allowed me to pay $404 for 2023 federal tax.
Wow.
Because we cost segregated. And you know, that strategy again, let's get you your first deal and then start thinking about the tax implications, whatever tax bracket you're in. Know that. Put that money away. So if you make $100 and you're a 30% tax bracket, put $30 of that away or $1,300 of that away to invest in real estate. And start talking to a good certified public accountant, one that knows real estate right now.
Yeah, I would advise you guys, don't get overwhelmed by some of this conversation about like, oh, they're talking about $100,000 deployment of tax. Like, I just want my first $10,000 deal. I can tell you, my wholesale journey would have been a lot easier if I knew where the journey was supposed to go, right? Like, I knew, I didn't just know the first step. I knew that that's ultimately where I want to be is in 5 years or 7 years, what my business should look like. Because I would have reverse engineered and I would have created an equation that would have said, I didn't learn this stuff until like my fifth year. I wish I learned in my first year because I would own more property tax. I would own more properties. I'd have more cash flow. I'd have a bigger team. And it took me like 4 years. I'm like, wait, am I just supposed to keep grinding out for more and more wholesale deals? And somebody was like, no. You got to come up with an equation. I'm like, what's that equation? They told me basically what we talked about here. I'm like, oh my gosh, why didn't somebody tell me that like 3 years ago? I would have changed. I wouldn't have let my lifestyle go up. I wouldn't have done this. I wouldn't have done that. I would have been deploying capital. Oh my gosh, what the heck? I left so much money on the table. And we got to a point where we were doing in our first year, we did our first deal in our first year in wholesale, we did about 100 deals. And I bought nothing. No, nothing. And I paid a significant amount of tax. I look back at that and I'm like, I paid $300,000 in taxes my first year in wholesale. If I had deployed that into creative finance holdings, that $300,000 I wouldn't have given to the IRS would have gone into a portfolio. And the math shows me that my net worth would have been about $5 million more today than it is because I instead gave it to the IRS. I wish I freaking knew that. And I didn't. Nobody taught me. Or maybe I wasn't ready for it and people were saying it. It just was like one ear out the other.
Yeah, that's true as well. When the student's ready, the master will arrive. Pace, man, this has been an incredible podcast. I have one more question for you. Yeah. What gets you out of bed in the morning, every single morning on fire? Because you're always on fire. You go, 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 go. You provide so much to your community. I mean, you're a go-giver. Like, what is that spark? Like, what gets you out of bed every morning?
I got a text message from one of my employees. Her name is Shelly Tier. And Shelly joined my team as a transaction coordinator about a year ago. We have 7 transaction coordinators. That's how many deals we're doing, which is pretty awesome. And I didn't give her the job. There was no ad out. One of our other transaction coordinators lives 2 streets away from her. and knew that Shelly had 5 kids and a husband who was sick. And Shelly needed to go get work, right? But think about a stay-at-home mom raising 5 kids all these years. What skills has she learned that are applicable in the workplace? Almost nothing. And so she joined our team, our transaction coordination team, and she sent me a text the other day. And she said, I almost want to pull it up, but she said, basically, hey, so a year ago, I was going to take a job as a lunch lady to make money, to make ends meet. I didn't know that this was even a possibility. I didn't even know that these things existed. Somebody enlightened me, gave me this job, and now working for you, I now have a new sense of self-worth, confidence, understanding of the real estate world. I actually, like, I think that I can be a millionaire one day. Guys, just in 12 months, because of a job that I supplied to somebody, their entire life and their children's lives have changed. Now, her children, she texted me this as well. She said, my son, 16 years old, says to me, the first time he's ever said this to me, says, Mom, I'm proud of you. It looks like you're improving and you're learning things. And it gives me chills to even say this. So what gets me out of bed every morning is knowing that that is why God put me on this planet, is to provide opportunity and understanding for other people. My job is to go bash down all the doors of opportunity so all those doors are open for the people that are behind me.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. So powerful. I can't even imagine how she felt when her son said, I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's some of the basic human needs that we have. You know, we want our spouse to be more attracted to us. We want our children to be proud of us. We want to be upstanding community members. Like, we want to serve our communities. These are the things, like, if we can remember this when we're talking to sellers and buyers and give them a way to make that happen, it's amazing. Like, doors will open. Pace, thank you so much. God bless you. Rhino Nation, what an incredible episode. Listen to this multiple times. Remember to take action on these things. Don't just listen to this for your pleasure going down the road and jump to another podcast. You know, go back and listen to the things that Pace talked about and start implementing them in your business. Figure out that equation right now. Pray about it. Think about it. Talk to your wife or husband about it and start implementing it now. I don't care if it's 1 out of every 30 properties or 1 out of every 10, but keep something today. And remember, you know, that you're going to need income when you're older as well.
Yes. So,
God bless Rhino Nation. Thank you so much, Pace.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you.
That's all for this episode. Your next step to success is to continue the conversation over at wholesalinginc.com by joining the mailing list, as well as get your chance to book a strategy session to learn the systems and become part of the tribe and work personally with one of our amazing coaches. We'll see you next episode with more ways to make you a fortune in wholesaling.